So, Dr. Poland, I think a lot of people are hearing the phrase RNA vaccine for the first time. What does that mean, and is this actually the first time we're seeing it?
In some ways, yes. It's the first time that the general public has seen this. But there's an mRNA vaccine against Ebola, and these vaccines started in their development 30 years ago in 1990. They've changed substantially, hence, as of yesterday, you've seen two achieve what's called emergency use authorization. And, you know, I guess maybe it's a word that sounds scary if you're not familiar to it, but all mRNA is, all it is a blueprint for one protein from the virus. So it's sort of like saying the car was sitting there all along and all we did was put the engine in it. And that's what it does. So it's a blueprint that gets delivered into our cells. That blueprint causes our cells to make copies of the spike protein, the S protein, a protein that comes from the virus. It makes that for a few hours, displays those proteins on our immune cells and stimulates an immune response, which protects us. And the amazing thing about these vaccines is we expected, efficacy in the 50, 60%, something like that. This has been 95 to 100% across all races, across all ages, across all other concomitant medical problems. We do not have other vaccines this powerfully effective.
I think the accelerated timeline for these vaccines concerns some people. We hear a lot of questions about how the vaccine will interact with other medications and chronic conditions, for example. What do we know from the trials that were conducted?
Yeah, well, we know a lot. We know thousands and thousands of pages of material. It has been rapid. That acceleration of time has not been cutting corners on the science side. What's been involved is the rapid movement through the normal phases of clinical research and a lot of cutting of so-called red tape. Now, having said that, the more people you test, the more confident you become. Let's take an average vaccine. An average vaccine might be tested in 10,000 people and then released. So far, this has been tested, the mRNA vaccines I'm talking about, in 70,000 people. We never, ever have vaccine trials that big. So we have roughly 70,000 people, and because you get, 75,000, and because you get two doses, 150,000 doses of vaccine. That's never been done before. We have never waited to license a vaccine until 150,000 doses have been distributed. So while it seems rushed, it seems so fast because we're in the middle of a pandemic and you could accumulate cases so fast because of people's inability to follow basic public health recommendations or unwillingness to follow them. And so you have this wildfire of a pandemic going on, which when you're doing a clinical trial means you can test your vaccines very, very quickly, which they did.
And even with this large test base, is there going to be a piece of this that is kind of wait and see for certain conditions as we continue to roll it out to more Americans?
Yeah, that's a good question, Dana. And the nature of science for everything you use in your life, which came from science, every single thing you use in your life came from science. We always learn more. For example, how much more basic than turning the water on in your home and getting water through your pipes? That happens through science. And while we've been doing that for, I don't know, more than 100 years, new information that microorganisms form biofilms inside those pipes, and sometimes that can make people sick. So my point is, there's nothing, and this is really important, there's nothing you use in your life that doesn't come from science, and there's nothing that doesn't have both benefits and risks. So you drink water out of your tap, there's a, you know, it's obviously very small, but there's a risk to that. But you're accepting that risk because you think the benefit is better. Probably many people will drive a car today or this week, even though there's a 15-20% lifetime risk of permanent disability from doing that. I mean, imagine if I told you that about a medication. You'd say, no way would I use it. But you think nothing of it in driving your car because you see that the benefits outweigh those risks. The same is true with vaccines. We will never know everything. That just doesn't happen in science. What we do know is that people age 16 and older have enrolled in these trials, that they have enrolled people by age group, by race and ethnicity, and having a lot of medical problems. But you can never enroll enough of every single medical problem that occurs. So there's a point at which you say, we have enough data to say we can generalize this. Now, maybe you'll find an exception. Those usually don't come up until millions have gotten a vaccine, for example. So what do we not know at this point? Well, because it hasn't been tested yet, we don't know the efficacy and safety in children, in pregnant women, in people who are highly immunocompromised, in the eldest of the elderly. Those would be kind of another category would be people who have severe autoimmune diseases. We are, with the Pfizer vaccine, beginning to learn something about, is there a possible allergy signal here? So far, the number of cases are less than what you would expect in the general population. Nonetheless, some of them have occurred within minutes after getting a vaccine. Now you have to be careful. Temporality is not causality. So it merely provides a hypothesis for us to look into. So those would be some of the issues.
So we have the Pfizer vaccine and now the Moderna vaccine. As the vaccines become more widely available, which we know could take some months, does it matter which one people take?
At this point, no. They are virtually indistinguishable in efficacy, in every way we know to measure. Now, more people have gotten the Pfizer vaccine. That trial was 44,000 people, and we don't have an exact count, but since it's released by EUA over a week ago, tens of thousands of more people have gotten the vaccine. And we've seen, I think we are at 4 allergic reactions. So are those associated with vaccine? I think we have to sort of say to ourselves, let's be cautious and say that they are due to that. We don't know that yet, but let's just say that they are. That gives us reason to investigate scientifically to see what would be causing an allergic reaction. Are there certain kinds of people that shouldn't get the vaccine? Now, this was not seen in the 44,000 people who got two doses. So, you know, why would it be happening now? And that's why many people think it may not be related. So with that one proviso, that I think whenever your turn comes up and you have access to a vaccine, get it.
And will people get a choice, or will it be more so the provider's decision on what's available?
I don't think it's so much the provider's decision as just physically what's available. Now, there's a lot of Moderna vaccine. I think they said they have 100 million doses. So that's going to start rolling out very quickly. The FDA has to accept the recommendation made yesterday by the FDA Advisory Committee. Once they do, we'll rapidly see those 100 million doses roll out. So it's possible that some locations could have both Moderna and Pfizer. I rather doubt it. The goal is to spread the vaccine out as much as we can to give as many people as possible a chance at getting the vaccine.
And so we've heard this goal of getting 80% of people vaccinated to achieve herd immunity. And we know that there's this contingent of people who say they don't want to take the vaccine. Taking that into account, are we on pace to reach that 80% mark?
Yeah, this is going to be a very tough job, Dana. Let's just take influenza vaccine. We've been making and distributing influenza vaccine for 7 decades. 7 decades. We're actually getting into the 8th decade. And yet people still reject that vaccine. So I'm not surprised that people will reject it, because they're uninformed about the risks of rejecting it and the true risks of getting infected with SARS-CoV-2. To the extent that people reject the vaccine, we will continue as a society to shoot ourselves in the foot. We will prolong needlessly the pandemic. Thousands of people will die as a result of that. Hospitals will continue to be overwhelmed, and people will be harmed. It's a very selfish thing when people don't take precautions and when they reject vaccines, because they're not only placing themselves at risk, but the people around them.
Do we need to get so-called anti-vaxxers on board for this to work?
Well, the number of true anti-vaxxers is actually very small. The true anti-vaxxers are people who reject science. So you have to just leave them behind. Do you try to share information? Sure. But when the very basic premise or presupposition upon which knowledge is built is rejected, well, what can you do? There's not much to say. There's not much discussion that can occur. And which is really funny, because of course the only way they get their message out is by using technology and science. So it's kind of a bizarre situation. I think most people, the vast majority of people, want to make a good decision. They're just not sure how to do that. My daughter, and she'd be a good one for you to interview, is a mental health counselor with a specialty in trauma and decision making. And she would point out to you that the vast majority of people are mathematically illiterate and make decisions based on emotion and heuristics like peer pressure, things like that. So they're not actually making a data-driven decision. They're making a decision in a way that harms them, generally speaking. That's why, for example, as silly as it is, marketers have learned this. You'll buy something for $1.99, but you won't for $2. And yet the difference is meaningless.
And so policymakers have shied away from vaccine requirements. That includes healthcare systems. So Central Illinois hospitals and hospitals around the country say they're encouraging their employees to get the vaccine, but they're not mandating it. What risk does that pose? And
yeah, so full disclosure, so I am the architect of the plan in the U.S. that requires healthcare workers to get flu vaccine. So in this particular case, I do not believe that making any coronavirus vaccine mandatory should be done. I don't think it should be done because these are vaccines under EUA. Once they become licensed, that's a different story. And then I think the military, healthcare workers, first responders, et cetera, then I think it should be mandatory. The reason for it is the trust. As a physician, I took an oath that says first, that is before anything else, first, do no harm. And when healthcare workers spread a vaccine-preventable disease to vulnerable patients, that is breaking trust.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And a number of Black Americans say that they're hesitant about taking the vaccine, and the reason behind that is just kind of this history of racism in medical research in the United States. How do we address that fear?
Yeah, so I think, I think this is a extraordinarily important issue. But it's one that's very difficult to talk about because it tends to be one-sided. Here's what I mean by this. There is no question that our Black and Brown brothers and sisters, our Native American brothers and sisters have suffered prejudice, racism, insufficient medical care, frank abuses. I mean, it's unconscionable and it's immoral. I want to be very clear about that. But there's another side of the street, so to speak. If you live in a world where you say there's no possibility of doing good, that I will only be harmed by the medical system, there's no solving the problem. So what I think has to happen is that we need Blacks and Hispanics and Native American, they need to be as equally represented and involved in the science, in the decision making, in the approvals, In everything else. They need to be equally involved. They need to participate in the studies so that we have data in people that look like me, that look like you, you know, et cetera, so we actually know. And then we have a responsibility. When the public health authorities say wear a mask, you need to wear a mask. When they say this is a safe and effective vaccine, at some point, you have to believe that it's a safe and effective vaccine. Otherwise, you'll get infected. Otherwise, the rates will be very high. And yes, you'll see an excess number of deaths and hospitalizations. So the question is, how do we break out of this catch-22? And I personally think that it does help to have opinion leaders representing every group. Who are involved in the process and who can vouch for the credibility of the science and of the recommendations. I don't think it's a case of Black people or Hispanic people or Asian people or Native American people or redneck people, whatever you want to call them. I don't think it's a case that most of them want to get sick. It's just that they don't know what to do and they don't trust what they're being asked to do. So the trick here, the wisdom resides in figuring out how do you build trust, and where trust is breached, how do you call that out and prosecute it?
And so states saw this week their second batch of Pfizer vaccines halved as far as the number that they expected to receive and then what they were told they're now going to receive. Is there reason to be concerned about the manufacturing and distribution side of this plan working?
That's always a concern. I don't think that's the reason for the cutback. My understanding of the reason is that the government thought that they were going to get more Pfizer vaccine than they actually contracted for. I think we'll see a lot of Moderna vaccine. Nonetheless, you may have seen 400,000 doses of Moderna vaccine had to be discarded because of an error in the final manufacturing stage of one batch. That's always a concern when you're making a biologic. Biologics are much more difficult to make than, say, a drug. You're always keeping an eagle eye on your supply chain, on your manufacturing process. That's just key. I think what's harder with the two mRNA vaccines is they require a cold chain that other vaccines don't typically require. We don't have any other vaccine, for example, that requires the ultra cold chain that the Pfizer vaccine does. The Pfizer vaccine requires storage at temperatures lower than Antarctica. I mean, that's a very difficult, that you've automatically made it logistically difficult to move your vaccine around and to use it. Once we have those vaccines, I don't think there'll be concerns. The question is, how quickly can they manufacture and distribute vaccines, which, by the way, they're trying to do for the whole world, not just the United States.